everybody, and welcome to episode 119 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I'm Ron, as always, joined by the man who was Kimberly Guilfoyle's speech coach for the RNC, Brian. Brian, how goes it this week, my friend?
I said to her, I said, Kimmy, what are we doing here? Go big or you go home.
And she lived up to that. She definitely went over the top.
She took it home.
A little bit crazy. We got a jam-packed episode this week. Lots of stuff happening. Thank you all for joining in. Should we just get right into it, Brian?
I can't think of anything else we should be doing other than getting into it.
All right.
Drink of the week.
На здоровье.
Salud.
Drink of the week.
Drink of the week. Drink of the week.
All right. Here it is again. Brian, what are you bringing to the table for your drink? Is that a Jack and Coke I see in your hand there?
Well done, Ron.
Nice. I mean, it's a classic. It's a go-to. How is it?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So again, third week in a row, I am going with the Black is Beautiful beer. This version from Locust Lane Craft Brewery in Malvern, Pennsylvania. Again, an Imperial Stout. Their version only 9% of last
year. Oh, no.
And a 10%. But kudos to them. They have actually established a Locust Lane Black is Beautiful scholarship fund. So they will be giving a scholarship in the spring of 2021 to an African-American high school student near, you know, at one of the schools near them. So the proceeds of the sale of their Black is Beautiful is going to fund that sponsorship.
Are we donating any money other than the funds you are putting in exchange for beer?
Not as of yet. But okay. We can talk about it.
All right. No. I just...
Patreon thingamabobber.
I appreciate the fact that you have decided to support the Black is Beautiful adult beverage movement.
Take a sip there. Hold on a second. Let me see how this compares.
Come on. Hi.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I like that. It's got that, you know, the other ones were a little smooth. This has got that little bit of a bitter aftertaste that I like with a stout.
You do like a bitter aftertaste.
I do. You know, I like having that taste in my mouth that reminds me of what I've been doing.
Okay. So why is it that when you and I went to Fleet Week, back when we were in college, we drove down to New York,
we wouldn't discuss that, Brian. But one thing we can discuss, your attempt yet again to bring a sponsor to the table for the Ron and Brian podcast. So Brian,
all right,
who is it you have this week?
I got the WWE.
Oh, World Wrestling Entertainment. Impressive.
That's right. Are you ready?
I am as ready as I'm going to be.
I'm going right into the read. We're okay. Not going to dawdle. We're not going to dabble. We're not going to bibble or babble. I'm going right into the read.
All right. Bring it on.
Okay. Now, I was told that word for word, this is how it has to go, because Vince McMahon approved this copy personally, and he said that all podcast ads have to be this way.
Let's see how much you get through, Brian.
I appreciate your optimism. Thanks. As the world continues to come to terms with the new normal of what life is, entertainment has become more important than ever. We are all looking for something to distract us from the sickness, the plague, the death, the pitchforks carrying body bags out of hospitals into refrigerated trucks. But I digress. While the country has recently been rattled by recent events in Kenosha, Wisconsin, causing the disruptions to the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs, and Major League Baseball season, the WWE wants to let you know that our show will go on. We prioritize the motto, "The show must go on." And while fans across the world may no longer be able to attend in person some of the high-quality sports entertainment which we have packed into arenas, we have come up with an amazing way for fans to remain part of the action. Welcome to the WWE Thunderdome. Oh. Fans across the globe can register now to be represented by a flat-screen monitor, which will appear in the Thunderdome currently located in...
Brian, I hate to interrupt you yet again, because that might lead people to believe that that's a thing that I do each week, is interrupt your read for the sponsorship.
But it's the WWE Thunderdome. What could be wrong?
I mean, they had a little issue with the Thunderdome. They had some people showing some white nationalist memorabilia on their screen. Some people showing Chris Benoit pictures. It got a little ugly there. Again, in the spirit of our broadcast this week, I'm not going to shut down the WWE's free speech. They can be our sponsor, but I'm going to probably cut your speech a little bit short about our sponsor.
But what I don't understand is that the WWE announced a very strict policy where they required fans from refraining from the use of profanity, violence, despite the WWE literally being violent, inappropriate language, inappropriate clothing, nudity, off-color remarks, or third-party brand or political messaging.
It may shock you, but sometimes people will agree to something and then not do it.
But that's not... That wouldn't take place in the world of wrestling, would it?
You know what? It's almost like the whole thing was staged and people were setting up the WWE. I have no answers for you there.
I'm a little hurt. I'm a little hurt. I feel like I was taken advantage of here.
Well, you you go back to the drawing board. Okay. You find a sponsor for next week.
I will.
Time. I think maybe we get caught up on This Week in Racism.
This week.
Racism.
Again, another horrible week in racism. Only one page this week. Again, not counting racism from our president or from our police forces. But we are having a few stories to report on going out to Prescott, Arizona. A white woman was recorded in a fast food drive-thru yelling at a black man who was hanging out with a group of white people. At one point, she yelled, quote, "You fucking black bitch, you fucking black, you black hanging out with white kids, and that's your problem." She also yelled at the white people filming her, and she was also visibly drunk and driving, which is also great. She has not, this is surprising because it's been online for about a week, not identified by the internet as of yet.
Internet has failed us.
This time they have, yes. Going down to Loganville, Georgia, a Gwinnett County police officer had been placed on administrative duty following his arrest of a black woman on the front porch of her home. Officer Michael Oxford had been called regarding a dispute between neighbors when one of the group of homeowners yelled at him to get off of their property. Rather than de-escalate the situation, Oxford ended up tasering one of the women. Video of the incident was posted on TikTok and has been viewed over 20 million times. After that internal review was conducted, which happened very quickly, Officer Oxford was fired last Friday.
Okay, good for him. Good for him. I'm sure he's going to find a job in the Deep South.
In Winnetka, Illinois, a white woman was arrested for assaulting a black cyclist in her neighborhood after falsely accusing him of trespassing. Otis Campbell was walking along a public pier after a bike ride when he was confronted by Irene Donoshaitis, telling him that he wasn't allowed on the pier without a parking pass. A parking attendant corrected her and said that the pier is open to the public, but Donoshaitis continued to harass Campbell, who recorded the incident on his cell phone. The video ends with Donoshaitis taking a swing at Campbell. She was later arrested and charged with misdemeanor battery. Going out to the West Coast, Santa Clara, California, Santa Clara University is conducting an investigation after a black assistant professor said that she and her brother were harassed by campus security in a racially motivated encounter. Danielle Fuentes Morgan tweeted about how her brother, who was visiting her, was sitting outside on campus working on his laptop when security approached him and told him to move along. They then followed him to the street where there were four additional security cars. He then walked to his sister's house, where officers asked her to provide ID to prove that she lived there. Officers claimed that her brother was acting suspicious and that they should, quote, stay to open spaces. The SCU president, Kevin O'Brien, issued a statement apologizing, while he also announced the internal investigation. Probably our worst case of the week down in Boca Raton, Florida. And we always have to go to Florida at least once.
Fucking Florida.
Speaking racism. A white woman slapped an 11-year-old black child in the face and used a racial slur towards him after he had bumped into her from behind on a go-kart track at Boomer's Amusement Park. Haley Aaron Zager told police that she had, quote, tapped the boy's face when he didn't apologize to her. Three park employees saw her hit the child, and one employee commented that she told him that a fucking N-word hit her in the back. The boy's father said the crash occurred when another go-kart rammed into the row of vehicles, causing a chain reaction. Zager was charged with second-degree felony child abuse, and in addition, police found an Altoids tin packed with various pills in her underwear when she was searched, which resulted in four counts of drug possession for prescription pills.
She hid the Altoids in her underwear?
Apparently, yes. And I assume it's one of the big tins, not the little mini tins. I used to love those mini Altoids.
Mini tins!
But I digress. Yes.
I know that drug users have a reputation for not having the highest level or a standard of hygiene. But my question is, you're hanging out with your lady friend, and she says to you, "Hey, you want to take some OxyContin or whatever they're called, whatever the kids call it nowadays." And you're like, "Yeah, baby. Yeah, let's do some Oxy." And then she literally dips her hand down into her underwear and pulls out an Altoids tin. And for the sake of this experiment, we're going to say it was the small miniature thing of Altoids, okay. Not the large one.
Okay.
Let's say the miniature one. What circumstances would be required at that moment, Ron, for you to take one of those pills?
I mean, I guess I would really want to take whatever one of those pills were. I think what it really comes down to, and my wife says this constantly, for women's fashion, they don't include enough pockets in their outfits. So I feel maybe she had no other choice but to stuff the Altoids tin deep down in her nether regions.
Okay.
But this is the thing. If you are...
But isn't that what a purse is for? I'm terribly sorry to not be sympathetic towards women, but they do. They insist on carrying purses. They have multiple purses. They have defined the purse as an accessory where they have one for each type of outfit.
But think about it this way. I mean, you're going to an amusement park. I mean, you know, maybe you bring a clutch, but if you're on, you know, roller coasters, go-karts, for example, you really want to tuck those prescription pills away somewhere they're not going to go flying, especially if you accidentally get hit
True.
When you're in your go-kart.
Okay. Valid. Very valid. Okay.
But what I don't understand, this is not the first story where we have had someone that committed a crime or an assault and was carrying an illegal weapon or drugs or whatnot. I would think, like, if you know that you're carrying illegal drugs, would you maybe think maybe I shouldn't hit this 11-year-old kid because I'm probably going to get in trouble and they're probably going to search my underwear.
I'm thinking that if you are the kind of person that's going to see an 11-year-old kid and think to yourself, you know what? I'm going to go hit that kid. It's not my kid. I don't know that kid. But I'm going to go walk over and hit that kid. I'm thinking that you're not making the best life decisions. So the idea of, hey, I'm carrying contraband on me and we'll get arrested for it, I'm not sure that that works into their decision tree.
Fair enough. Listen, and kudos to the kid's father for not wanting to lay Haley out. Because, like, I know my mom, if, like, a stranger had, like, slapped myself or my brother, she would have gone up one side of him and down the other.
There would have been a problem.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, that's This Week in Racism, unfortunately. Never gets any better. We always hope that it does, but there just seems to be more and more horrible stories.
We've had ups and downs.
We've had.
And if I can also comment, I don't know that we are done with racism for this week. I don't think we've wrapped it all up in a nice bubble. I think there's still some messy loose ends, which we will be getting back to later on in the show.
Yes. Bigger stories that we keep aside from this week. And
yeah.
But in the meantime, it is time to bring on our special guest this week. Joining us this week is Mr. Bill Cushing, a Navy veteran. He earned his Master of Fine Arts in Writing while teaching English and History in Puerto Rico for 3 years. He recently retired after over 23 years of teaching at East LA and Mount San Antonio colleges, and currently resides in Glendale, California, with his wife and son. As an active member of the Libertarian Party since the mid-90s, He ran as their candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives in 2010 and has been a featured speaker on the issues of free speech and censorship for both local party chapters and area schools. Everybody out there, help me welcome Mr. Bill Kutchin. Bill, thank you for joining us tonight.
Come on, get up. Come on, people. Standing ovation. Come on. Welcome, Bill.
As a guy who lived 13 years in Florida, I think only in Florida could you have an incident of road rage on a go-kart track.
Very good point. Very good point. Well, part of the reason we brought you in, kind of like we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, we're going to be talking a little bit about free speech, about censorship, about cancel culture. We do a number of stories, I would say. We've done a ton of cancel culture stories over the past, couple of years that we've been doing this podcast. It really does seem to be a big thing. What's your thoughts on, overall thoughts on free speech and the cancel culture that we have in our country right now?
I'm surprised they're not considering it as a competitive sport in the Olympics now, given the intensity with which it is growing. Of course, I've always been a big defender of free speech. I was raised by a Goldwater Republican, and to me, Goldwater was a libertarian, even though not in name, certainly in fact. And as a writer, of course, I'm all for free speech, free expression. The cancel culture, it's interesting because it's really taken off. Although I'm finding it interesting now that there's some pushback on it, which I think is great. This guy who did the GoFundMe on the Goya thing was great. I mean, he wanted to raise $10,000. He's over $300,000. So good for him. I'm finding more and more that I think people are getting tired of being told what they can or cannot say, whether in polite company or not. I mean, it's really gotten to the point where something you say, people my age always say, thank God the internet wasn't around when we were growing up because we'd be in real deep duty.
I can relate to that.
Said that, we had some, Brian and I have been together since our college days. And we certainly have some instances that, thankfully we didn't have Twitter or TikTok or, Snapchat.
Or even cell phone videos.
True.
Just a cell phone camera. Like the number of moments that I can think of, as a kid growing up where nowadays you literally and any group of people, whether you're talking teenagers all the way through, somebody is literally holding a cell phone at any moment and knows that it's literally power swipe and they've got a active camera or video camera at that very moment. And one of the things that I find interesting is it seems like the society, it's a pendulum where it swings from one side to the other, one side back, and it very rarely seems to be leveled at the center. It seems, we went through a period of time where everybody was getting canceled. And now what I've started to notice, which I think is very interesting, is how the individuals on the right that are being attacked for their behavior are handling it very differently than people who are on the left. You've got people on the left who are being exposed for bad behavior and immediately accept that they're going to be canceled, apologize, go into rehab for whatever their issue is, where what it seems to be a rejection of the cancel culture on the right, where they are just standing up saying, yes, I'm not perfect, I did this, now can we just move on?
Yeah. Well, and very much tied in, like you were talking about with the racism thing, it's losing its palette because it's used so often now. It's almost like, I've gotten to the point where if somebody calls me racist, I go, okay, you got that out of your system now, can we move on and get back to the original argument? Or are you just going to engage in name calling all day long? And it's always interesting, but I'm here again. I don't think you hold people accountable for what they said when they were 17 or 25 and drunk or whatever. I gotta say, I think, and looking back, and maybe it's just my old fart mind going, but I really think the most open time I can recall was probably the 80s, when people were more, they had a better perspective to me. You know, they didn't get upset over everything they heard. You know, you were able to talk. It seemed to me I was able to talk more freely and accept things more freely. And I think really the 90s, when you had this whole PC thing come in, it sort of started then. Although it actually started before that. I mean, I used to use one of the examples I used when I would teach. And by the way, I have to, you know, talk about YouTube. I was always shocked that I was never captured on video when I was teaching, being very openly libertarian. So as an English instructor, I was sort of in the belly of the beast there. And I would always say, look, when I was growing up, I was told by my parents I had to look out for my sister because she was mentally retarded. And that was the word you use. And that's a medical diagnosis. In fact, my son now is retarded as well. But I remember, I guess, probably toward the end of the 70s, somebody said, well, no, you don't say that. It's this. And I said, okay. But slowly it moved away from mental retardation to differently able. And I'm like, no, wait a minute, stop. And it's funny because one of the things in Orwell's 1984, he talks about newspeak and altering the language. And where Orwell kind of got it wrong was he saw the language as removing terms. I see the language being corrupted by adding more adverbs and adjectives and stuff in there, such that by the time you say the thing, it basically means nothing.
You do have to kind of learn a new vocabulary every month. Yeah. And, you know, and again, I mean, you know, I think there are, to your point, I mean, I think there are statements that I think for those that live that experience seem a little ridiculous, versus those that, you know, are meant to be a little bit more uplifting. So I think it becomes confusing for people in the general public, you know, due to that.
Oh yeah. And no doubt. And certainly retarded is a word that is used, you know, in a negative way, but it's the tone of voice. You can tell, you know, and in fact, I always said, like, what was the whole PC thing about was you don't use terminology that might offend the person that you're talking about. So it was a way of saying, no, look, we're just not going to use. I said, well, have you ever dealt with somebody who's medically, mentally retarded? Do they really care? Are they offended? No. So really, who am I saving? Not. I've always said to me, and using that as an example, it was, you're not saving the feelings of the person you're talking about. You're saving your feelings because you don't want to confront the reality. Because when you hear the word retarded, that is a very visceral, concrete state of being, and it's not comfortable. If I say differently able, it's such a mush of words that it basically means nothing.
But at some point, at the rate that we're going, that may be filled with the same spikes. You know, if you fast forward 7 years from now, if I were to say, "Oh, this person is differently abled," I literally could lose my job.
The bad term. Yeah. And this is one of the other problems: is the more you monitor speech, the more you got to change it. you can never keep up.
Sorry, Brian, go ahead.
I was going to just say that one of the things that I find interesting about what's going on in today's world is that the free speech advocates that have become so vocal about defending free speech have actually become in many ways just as intolerant of speech as the people that they are going after.
Well, that when I hear that, I just say, well, then you're pretending to defend speech, not action. In fact, I had that argument with somebody not very long ago, a couple of years ago, but I said something about freedom of speech. He said, well, yeah, but, and I said, no, there's no buts. You're either for it or against it. I'm pretty right down there.
And it is challenging because, I mean, even, you know, even hate speech, you know, you want to be silenced, but, you know, there's the challenge of, you know, it becomes a slippery slope of, you know, if you start removing speech that you find offensive, you know, where does it stop? You know, well, where does it end?
I always love hate speech laws or rules or whatever. It's just a euphemism for censorship. The thing I always like to point out, and I think a really good example is now with this constant beating the drum of the rise of the neo-Nazis. Well, when did the neo-Nazis really lose their power? It was in the 70s and 80s when people could openly talk about them and talk about these terms. And they sort of went away because they realized, well, I have no power. As soon as the words start offending, then, all right, now I can use them again.
Do you think they actually lost power? Or do you think they just kind of do you think they just went off the radar where they were still just equally as opinionated and held on to these beliefs, but they just didn't feel as comfortable or empowered to be able to be public or talk about these things?
Well, I think a lot of it was not so much, they knew that if they talked that way, people would just laugh at them and say, you're an idiot. Okay. And by the way, that is my biggest defense of free speech. It allows jerk-offs to expose themselves much more efficiently.
Yes. That's something Ron and I have spoken of many times.
Listen, people listen to us every week and they hear how stupid we are. So, I mean, we are well aware of that. Now, you also, Bill, you had published an article a couple of weeks back on BoomerCafe.com about free speech, and we'll share that link on our social media afterwards. But it was interesting. You referenced this recent Cato Institute study talking about how Americans, you know, say they have political views that they're afraid to share. And it says 2/3 of Americans, 62%, say that they prevent saying things in the workplace because others may find them offensive. Yeah. And there is a significant, I think it was half of strong liberals would want someone fired if they knew they were donated to the Trump campaign. And somewhere in the 36th percentile, I think, of strong conservatives would want someone fired if they contributed to the Biden campaign.
Yeah,
it was very interesting to see. But as a whole, conservatives seem to feel much more concerned voicing their viewpoints in the workplace than the liberals do.
I think they're more comfortable in their own skins. It might be it. Here again, like I say, I've had people call me names. And I just, okay, you know, that's the best you got. What can I do? It doesn't prove your point. It certainly doesn't disprove mine. And I do think I am a libertarian, but I lean conservative, I would say. You know, and it's interesting because that's one of the things I've always found that even when I left sort of the Republican, because I was Republican for years and left that party and latched on with the libertarians. But even after, I found that I can argue with my friends on the right and they don't get offended. They just basically, all right, we're clearly not going to agree on this. Okay, fine. Whereas people on the left, they'll get all bent out of shape. It's like, come on, you're allowed to have a difference of opinion. But yeah, like you say, this new, and I find it funny that the people who, and I say pretend to defend free speech. I always like to say to me, the progressive movement is the new Puritans. And of course, what was the old joke of Puritans live in constant fear that somewhere somebody's having a good time?
I remember that.
I think free, and in fact, here again, when I used to teach writing and critical thinking, I said, you look at some of the writing of really the 19th century, it was some of the best writing around. Because you had this new feeling of freedom and people were willing to go out there on a limb. So you had some really good stuff. And of course you got some wild ideas and weird ideas, but you're always going to have that. And censoring them isn't going to stop it.
Brian, you look like you had a question.
Oh, no, I actually have thousands of questions, but we'll narrow them down. What do you think is the best path forward towards swinging that pendulum back towards the center where we can be a little bit more civilized and start to see that we have more similarities than differences? It feels, you know, especially in the world today, we are, you know, even, you know, you bring up, like you mentioned earlier, you were talking about libertarians. And I was thinking to myself when you're mentioning it, you know, we live in just like this, this very, very strongly bifurcated society. You are either Republican or you are Democrat. And it is, it's so rare to hear somebody openly say, actually, I was a Republican and now I have left that party, but I don't want to be a Democrat because I don't like them either.
Well, I think, you know, it's funny. I think I only voted for one Democrat my whole life.
Who was it?
It was in the state of Florida. He was running for state treasurer. And the only reason I voted for him was that the Republican had been caught bouncing checks. I'm like, that's the guy I want in charge of the check.
No, that sounds like a Republican.
But I do admit I was looking at Clinton for a while until he said the I smoked but didn't inhale. And I just went, oh, come on now, please. Now you think I'm an idiot.
I just hope that Bill has finally learned what the word is really means.
What is it?
Yeah. But I stopped voting. Actually, Reagan's first term is when I flipped. And I said, no, I don't like either one of these guys. And it was funny because it was actually an economic decision more than anything else because of the tax increase that had been put in. I was working at shipyards at the time. And I worked two 24-hour days and then all weekend. So tons of overtime. And when I got my check, more had been taken out in taxes than I took home. And I was like, wait a minute. I was the idiot sucking coffee down all week trying to stay awake and get this job done. And that's why I said, there's got to be another alternative. It was more economic than anything else. But then as I learned more about, you know, it took a while before I actually became a party member. But I liked what they had to say. I like libertarianism. One of the things I say about libertarianism is it's kind of like chess in that you can explain it in about 20 minutes, but it takes you a lifetime to master it because you have to learn to put up with things you don't necessarily like. Whereas I think the other two parties, to me, get bogged down in rules, but it's very simplistic thinking. You know, that's just my impression.
Right. Now, we also on the topic of censorship, we're about a month away from the annual Banned Book Week. American Library Association kind of focuses on, you know, books that are, you know, targeted, you know, and again, I think our producer may have mentioned in our email, you know, I was an English major in college. I have kind of a love affair for the written word and for books. And, you know, I don't think, you know, governments or the mass public in general should be determining, you know, what people should be able to read. I mean, there's definitely controversial material out there, but I think it's up to the individual to be able to decide, you know, whether they should or could read it or not.
Yeah. And certainly I'm not against, say, school districts deciding, well, look, we're an elementary school. We're not going to have this in the library, but, you know, you leave it open. I had to laugh a couple of years ago out here. Some mother complained to the school district that apparently her daughter was a student at the school, took a book out of the library, and the mother started looking at it, and she found a bunch of sections underlined, which were very sexual in nature, and she raised hell about it, and the school put the book up. I was like, why do you think most of us read in high school?
Yeah.
That is very true. There were a couple of books, and I don't remember the titles now, but there were books that you would find and it would have something saucy in it. As far as eighth grade would go back then, I'm sure.
My favorite example, I was, of course, I'm of an age when I still taught Latin in high school. And my fourth year of Latin, we translated Ovid's Metamorphosis, this Roman poet. And I remember getting into the class. We had this great big thick book, and you know, this is going to be our assignment all year. We're going to translate. And we're all like, oh my God, no. We started to read it. It's like, man, this is some of the juiciest stuff I ever read in my life. Can't wait till next week. And what do we get then? But yeah, it's so funny because I always love to mention, and basically to Brian's point too, I was saying you were talking about the political divisions. I believe you're the one who majored in American history.
I did. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, remember the Jefferson Adams presidential race? I mean, you want to see some nasty stuff being thrown around?
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things that I think that teaches us is that, you know, it's cyclical. Things get nasty, they get better, they get nasty, they get better, they get nasty. You know, as we, you know, I would be remiss to let you walk away from here without asking you, how do you think the election in November is going to play out?
Oh, boy, it's going to be, well, it's going to be a shitstorm. No matter what happens,
we know that. I don't think there's anybody that doesn't think it's going to be a shit show.
I mean, you're going to have protests on either side or both sides or whatever. I have to laugh because I'm hearing references back to 2000, and I remember when that happened, and I had to laugh because, of course, I was here by that time. I moved here in '96, then started teaching at these colleges. And I remember coming in and, you know, asking the students what they thought. And, you know, and I always, that was one thing I always like to do was, all right, what do you guys think? Then I'll kick in what I think. And I let them rant and rave and how, you know, it's horrible and terrible and all this stuff. I said, well, look, first of all, we're talking about Broward County, okay? And I lived in Florida for 13 years, okay?
I lived in Broward County in 2000. I voted with the Hanging Chads. I remember them well.
But I was saying, you're talking about a county where the people there, the majority of people there, can play, keep track of 15 bingo cards at one time. And you're going to tell me they couldn't take care of one piece of paper? I ain't buying it.
I will say this. It was a very confusing ballot because the names were alternating between left and right. So you had George Bush on this line, Al Gore on this line, the Libertarian candidate, and the Chads were literally right down the middle. So do I think like 79-year-old Bertha from Hallandale was able to figure out which hole to punch with her thing? I mean, looking at it, I knew this was going to be a disaster. Yeah. I had no idea it was going to be that bad. But I remember thinking to myself, I'm not sure this is the smartest way that we should be electing a president at this point. I mean, one of the things that scares me and saddens me is just how the rest of the country, in terms of running elections, it's digital now. You know, you've got people, you know, that they're voting on iPads or on their phones or whatnot, and you know, we are still trying to figure out, you know, machines that are from the 1960s.
Well, this new, out here, the system is horrendous. I really hate this because what they've got is a great big screen with no privacy whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I was like, anybody who's standing 3 or 4 feet behind me can see who I'm voting for. And I don't like that. My vote is my own. It's my business. Right. And that really bothers me. But, it, you know, it's like, okay, I have, you know, of course, out here, it's all symbolic anyway for me.
Same thing. I'm in New York. Same problem. It's decided before I show up. You have a book on Amazon. Would you like to plug it?
Oh, hype absolutely.
It up. Let's people come on. Let's make our listeners buy it.
Well, this is the main one. Just happen to have a copy.
Conveniently located and highlighted. I love it. I love it.
It's called The Former Life. It's a book of poems, and it's subtitled. I want to get it right. An overview of 2 centuries, 60 years in the making. So it's basically a very biographical in many ways, although it goes into, I split it into people, places, and things. You know, about, I write a lot about music and that sort of stuff. But most of it is just my own life. I actually got to poetry for kind of a fact. I mean, I was, hell, I didn't go to school until I was 38. So, It took me a couple of times. I flunked out my first year right after high school, which is how I ended up in the Navy, by the way.
I came very close to flunking out my first year.
Yeah. Well, I did it just right. In fact, I remember my father, after it happened, he said, yeah, someday when you got about 3 hours, you can explain how you flunked gym. I didn't go. Had a great time, but didn't do much. But at the time, Vietnam was going on, and the Navy was... Well, I come from a Navy family, too. My dad was in the Navy. I'm named after a naval guy. But at that time, you didn't go to Vietnam in the Navy unless you specifically requested it. I was like, sounds good to me. sign me up. And basically, all I did was chase Russian boats around in the Caribbean for the most part. So it was not a bad experience.
All right.
So I flunked out the first time. I went back a few years later, but just wasn't into it. It just didn't hold my attention. Ended up working mostly on oil tankers because I was an electrician in the Navy, and I just continued that afterwards.
I mean, it seems like in the long run, it worked out for you.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, I'm very happy with how things turned out. I mean, we just passed 24 years here, my wife and I, so...
Congratulations.
Oh, thanks. It's funny. I always loved my 20th anniversary. My best man is still in New York, and we were talking, and he said, man, you believe you've been married for 20 years? I said, well, the big surprise to me is I'm at the same job for 20 years. Sometimes.
All right, well, we definitely appreciate you joining us on the podcast tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bill.
Enjoy retirement, and we'll look to, hopefully we can look to have you on again sometime in the future.
I would love it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Take care.
Call me anytime. Thanks, bud.
Will do. Thank you. Bill Cushing.
Good talk there. Good talk. I liked it.
Absolutely. What I liked was the fact that he didn't speak in broad generalities and use them as an umbrella of stating that he was just passing along facts.
And, we're obviously big fans of free speech here because Lord knows we enjoy being able to say whatever we want. Yeah.
But do we? Do we really like feel like we can say whatever we want? I mean, you cut me off during my WWE read and I hadn't even gotten to the really offensive part.
Although I will say, you know, the Cato Institute study that he referenced, talking about how people aren't comfortable, you know, with other people at work, you know, not necessarily knowing about, you know, being able to speak about their political, you know, like I'm not 100% comfortable with letting people at work know that I do this.
Yeah, but Ron, you don't have a job, so that's actually not an applicable statement. You don't work. You don't have, like, when you say that you don't feel comfortable, like, yes.
Stop making fun of me for a minute. Would you admit that you have a bit of pause, you know, if, like, your boss were to find out or listen to this?
Oh, my God. I would freak out. Nobody in my office knows that I do a podcast. Nobody can know that I do a podcast. And if I find out that anybody in my office knows about my podcast, all Fleshlight references need to stop immediately. That means anything that's posted on the YouTube group chat, it immediately struck out. Like I could not afford that blow to my ego. But it's actually, when you think about it, it's actually very true. And that's the fact that there has been this breaking down of the barrier between who you are in your personal life, between who you are in your work life, in the sense that you see, I mean, how many times have we seen where someone has done something atrocious or mildly atrocious or however you want to phrase it, and immediately they're fired from their job?
Right.
As an American, I genuinely do, I'm concerned about that it has now become acceptable that if you speak your piece in public and it is not considered politically correct, you are now fired from your job. You know, and as somebody who's been fired from his job, Ron, I would say that this is something where I believe you would be able to relate to the person that we're talking about.
I mean, technically, I was laid off.
Difference being,
I don't know. You're out of work either way. Speaking of atrocious, Brian, what? RBC this week.
Ooh.
So this and I'm not the first person to say this, but what is incredibly brave about the RBC?
Can I interrupt you for a moment?
Of course.
I put about three shots of Jack Daniels in this. Oh, now,
quite the
opposite. I did not measure, so it could be more, could be less, but it was at least like I would say up to about here on the glass before I put ice cubes in. Yeah. It hasn't kicked in yet,
but it will. It'll be there for after dark.
All that I'm saying now, people, is if you are not a Patreon and you are watching this right now, go to patreon.com/the Ron and Brian podcast. Go to our website, click on the Patreon button, because it is going to be lit.
But the message of the RNC seems to be that America is in shambles right now with Donald Trump as president. So you should reelect him to give him 4 years to fix everything he screwed up in the last 4 years.
No, not true. America is in shambles right now. Only Donald Trump can solve these problems. But also, Donald Trump and America are doing a great job.
A great job. That's why we don't need...
We are doing a great job.
Understood. How great. Bigly great.
So wonderful. Right? Is he talking right now?
I think he's closing out the convention tonight, so I don't think he'll be speaking. I don't know how long a period of time they gave him to give his closing remarks tonight.
Right, right.
Although someone gave the news flash today on Twitter and literally put it as a news flash that he will probably be attacking Joe Biden tonight. Which
What Twitter accounts are you following that's considered
I gotta update my Twitter, apparently.
Did I tell you that I signed up for his text mailing list?
You did not.
I signed up for the Donald Trump text mailing list, and I am answering every one of their surveys. And all their surveys are really just an attempt to get you to donate money.
Of course.
But I am answering all those surveys in the most haphazard form. I'm literally doing a yes, no, yes, no, 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 yes, no, yes, no, yes, all the way down, just because I want to fuck up their numbers.
Fair enough, and I appreciate you doing that.
It is a it is a fine distraction from the monotony of sitting on the New York City subways right now.
So here's a great question, especially given our topic this evening.
Love answering questions.
Let's talk Jerry Falwell Jr., who may or may not have resigned as president of Liberty University.
Did.
The university he said he sent a resignation letter. He said that he's not resigning.
I thought he acknowledged that he did resign.
It's back and forth. So here's the question to you. Should he have, and talking about this cancel culture, should he have resigned if it is true that, you know, he was in a thruple with his wife and a pool boy? Should he have resigned his position with Liberty University because of it?
Yes.
Defend yourself, Brian.
Can I have a sip of water?
You can have a sip of water. I'm going to take a little sip of water, too.
All right.
I mean,
all right. Again, I'm ready to defend myself.
All right, do it up.
Part of his job was to expound upon the Christian lifestyle, the Christian model, and enforcing Christian ideals.
Okay.
Part of his life was to sit on a chair on one side of his room while watching his 51-year-old wife on her back, legs up in the air, getting railed and pounded by the pool boy. Now, when you think of the famous phrase, "What would Jesus do?" which I think is a very popular filter for Christians to determine what action to take. They're walking down a path, they hit a fork in the road, not a spoon, a fork, and they go down this path, or do they make the decision to go down that path? They asked themselves the question, what would Jesus do? Now, if Jesus were to be sitting in the corner of a room and Mary Magdalene walks into the bedroom, lays on her back, while the pool boy comes and just starts, I did get lit. I think it did just kick in.
A little bit.
While Mary Magdalene is just getting railed by the pool boy, I would think that Jesus would sit there and say, you know what? This is a moment between the two of you, and I'm out. I'm going to allow you to have your privacy. I kind of get a sense from the limited exposure I have to the Bible that Jesus was a pretty decent human being.
That's how he's framed most of the time, yeah.
It doesn't feel that someone who sits there and casts aspersions on anyone that doesn't meet his standard of Christianity while subverting money from Liberty University to go pay for private jets for his pool boy, that doesn't seem to be living a disciplined ideological life.
Would you say perhaps not practicing what you preach? Oh,
you.
And now there is a student that has come forward in the last couple of hours alleging a sexual encounter with Becky Falwell as well. I mean,
no.
You know, I think it's one thing when it's a situation, you know, listen, I think there is nothing more sacred than the bond between a husband and a wife and their pool boy. But when you
or their podcasting partner.
But I when mean, you are the
I don't know if your wife is watching right now, but I have I don't know how many different ways I need to throw it out there in conversation that it's an option, that it is something that I would be up for, that if this was something she was interested in,
we know you're available, Brian. You have made that very clear to us. It's very uncomfortable, but you've made it clear. But point being, if you are the president of a university and your wife is, by this account, giving you oral sex in front of a student of said university, then I think there's a big issue.
Oh, wait a second. He had a student come into the room while his wife performed oral sex on him?
Apparently the student was staying over with them after band practice with their eldest son back in 2008.
You know, this one time at band practice.
Band practice. That one time at Liberty U band practice.
Fucking hell. Fucking hell. Like, it's just another example of these righteous Christians, and I'll say Christians, that there's probably just as evil Jews out there, Menachem Rabinowitz out there, you know, they're raping kids as well. But these righteous religious people who carry themselves like they are above other human beings, that they are these pious individuals, and then it comes out that they're fucking dirtier and nastier than everyone else. It's fucking predatory, and it's gotten to the point, and this is the real shame of it all, is that it's gotten to a point now where someone who actually is religious, you now will automatically assume that there is something perverted about them.
And I would just like to point out real quick, I know you can't see it on your end, but there is a big argument in the YouTube comments tonight over who can really comment on your fleshlight.
What do you mean?
There are people commenting and other people saying that's their domain. I think everyone can comment on the fleshlight, personally.
What are people comment? Like, is it... I will speak my truth.
Please do speak your truth to power.
The fleshlight came into play simply because somehow, I don't know, but I got on the mailing list for some adult toys websites that were just sending me emails about like sales for, you know, vibrators and other female oriented toys. And one day
near you that need attention, stuff like that.
No. It wasn't scams. It was just like Adam and Eve kind of stuff where it was just like, oh, if you buy 3 DVDs, you can get one free. And I would look at it and be like, nah, who's buying DVDs anymore? Pornhub. But it was just like one day I got an email that was just like a like for him special sale. And I just out of like just kind of like shits and giggles, I clicked the link. And then I was looking at curiosity. My first thought was just like, I'm not quite ready to like put something, you know, in my rectum. I'm not quite there yet to do it to myself. Somebody else wants to do it to me. It's a different, that's for the after dark. But it was just the idea of just like, I sat there and said to myself, we live in such a sex positive world now. We live in such a body positive world where it literally is empowering to women to talk about their sex toys, to have sex toys, to sit there and say, I want to have a healthy sex life. And sometimes that does involve not just me and my fingers or my hand, but it involves the use of paraphernalia. And I sat there and thought to myself, well, why the fuck is the stigma attached to men that if the male uses a sex toy, there's something creepy, nasty, perverted, gross about it? And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. This hand is very dry. Let's go out there and see what else is out there. And I feel utterly empowered to discuss it.
All right.
So if somebody in the YouTube channel wants to shame me, wants to make me feel less than, then I'm going to say that they need to go to Liberty University, where truly pious religious people go.
All right. And of course, probably the biggest story of this past week is the shooting of Jacob Blake by a Wisconsin police officer. From what we can tell, there was a barbecue, I believe, at Jacob Blake's house. There was a fight that started between two women there. He was attempting to break up the fight. Police arrived.
Police were called
to question him about it. He didn't want to talk to them. It was started to get into his car and then was shot 7 times in the back.
I do believe there was a struggle with him.
A little bit of a struggle.
You know, there was a second camera. But as we were talking earlier about how there are video cameras and everyone's got their cell phones out, you know, there is the video camera angle that we're all well aware of. But there was also one coming from the other side of that police car, which shows the police trying to subdue him, him struggling and being able to walk away. That still doesn't mean it's okay to shoot a man 7 times in at point blank range inside of his car while there are 3 children in the back seat.
And what's even more interesting is, you know, he is paralyzed right now from the waist down. They don't know if it's temporary. They don't know if it's permanent, but he is in restraints in his hospital bed.
No.
And he can't walk. They have him restrained? They have him restrained to his hospital bed, and he does not have the use of his legs.
Why is he restrained?
Because he has been arrested and charged.
What was he charged with?
I don't know what the charges are, but he is in restraints in his hospital bed, despite the fact that he cannot really move.
I think that says a lot about
our society.
What can we contribute towards him right now? I know he's got a GoFundMe. What can we do? Ron, talk to me.
Listen, when does it end? You know, we have this conversation. I mean, how long ago was the George Floyd murder? A month?
It feels like 3 years ago.
It's just ridiculous. And so you've obviously had protests in Kenosha, but now you have a situation where you've got this 17-year-old kid, Kyle Rittenhouse. His mom drives him from a state away to
Illinois
protest, and
with his AR-15,
which automatic rifle is not legal for him to carry. 18-year-olds can legally carry. He is illegally carrying this, and he ends up killing 2 protesters and shooting another, and then walks up to give him a.
But before that, hold on. Before you jump ahead, he's literally walking the streets of Kenosha armed with this rifle.
Correct.
Police do not pull him aside, stop him in any way.
The police seem so. There are protesters, and there are militia that seem to be showing up to support the police.
It's the Boogie Boys, right?
The Boogaloo Boys, very possible.
The little Hawaiian shirt jerk-offs.
but they are the police seem very content with letting people that support them walk around. And it's a perfect example. Kyle Rittenhouse, who killed and shot people, was able to walk around, whereas an unarmed black man gets shot 7 times in the back.
I'm going to say this, and however unpopular this sounds, the solution is not to burn down buildings. The solution is not to loot.
Right.
The solution is to protest. This is America, and you have the right to protest. If the cops want to stop you from protesting, they don't have the right. It's one of the freedoms in America. You don't have the right to burn down a store. You don't have the right to barricade government workers in their place of work and try and burn them to death. We do have a line between legal protesting and illegal. And when you're running around the streets burning down buildings, there's going to be problems. And I will say this, as a white male in his
very late 40s.
Fuck. I cannot say that I understand the anger of an African American male who is sitting there watching another person that he identifies with being gunned down by police officers who are statistically not going to pay the price for that. I don't understand. I cannot put myself in the shoes of that person, but I can say that it's all fucked up.
Oh, it's tremendously fucked up. And we are in addition to the protests. And again, I agree with you. And you know, the sad part is people, you know, paint all of the protesters with the same brush when we look at, you know, the businesses being burned down and people being injured. But it's, you know, it's a small percentage of the protesters, and it doesn't mean the protests should not happen. And we're seeing protests on the sports level too. The other night, NBA, double NBA, WNBA, NHL postponed all of their games. Naomi Osaka, a professional tennis player, sat out her semifinal match, and then the tournament actually ended up postponing all matches due to it. And I think, you know, it's interesting to see. You see it on a professional level, and you see it on more on a collegiate level now too, where you have black athletes saying, you know, it's fine for us to be entertainment for you when you want to watch sports, but we're not important enough for you to protect our lives from the police forces across this country. And so, you know, they are withholding that, and it's, you know, it'd be interesting to see.
That's horseshit. That's horseshit.
That's horseshit. Because
LeBron James driving whatever $1 million car he wants on an LA freeway, he gets pulled over for speeding. I don't believe LeBron James needs to worry that they're going to pull a gun on him.
No, I don't think it's a case of LeBron James worrying about it. But how much money do people make? How much money do white people make off of LeBron James? How many network executives? Oh. How many shoe executives? How many?
Do you know? You're thinking about the white executives. Do you know how many Chinese children have jobs making shoes because of LeBron James? Why is it that we don't talk about them? And this is where I'm going to call you out on your behavior, Ron, because you want to point to the Nike executives. You want to point to the NBA executives who are not participating in the sport, who are not actually making the shoes, who are not wearing the shoes, but they're sitting there collecting 7-8-figure paychecks at the end of the year for the roles that they wear. Why are you not also pointing to the Chinese child in Shenzhou who is currently making the equivalent of 3 cents a day while he is being forced under slave labor-like conditions in a factory to make 18 different LeBron James shoes every hour?
So you're referring to 8-year-old balls on chin sitting at a sewing machine stitching away LeBron's latest sweatsuit. We should all take that into consideration.
It will have a Black Lives Matter fist in the air. That will be the official LeBron James shoe manufactured under slave labor conditions in China. Yes. Why is it that we are not worried about him and his and his classmate, Cream of Sun Young Guy.
All right. You bring out a valid point. Also, Billy, crushing it again this week. Brian likes to point out how many people have jobs when talking to Ron. Very true. I feel attacked by you, Brian, but that's okay. Speaking of professional sports.
Ron, you do have to admit that you, and it's one of the things that I appreciate about doing this podcast with you.
Yes.
You do know when it's your turn to take the hit.
Every now and then, I do have to take it right across the face. Much like your fleshlight, I got to take it whether I want it or not.
All right, my turn. Right back. It's this. That's what I like about our dynamic here. It literally is like a tennis match that is not interrupted by a racial protest halfway through.
It's a little parry, a little whatever. Speaking of sports, it also came out earlier today that apparently Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred apparently wanted the Mets to take the field at 7:10 p.m. tonight, walk off in protest of the Jacob Blake situation, and then actually play at 8:10 p.m. So there is a video from Mets general manager Brody Van Wage, when Vaginen, I don't know how you say that.
Wojnarowski.
But, I mean, he is, you know, this GM is very critical of Rob Manfred. A lot of people have been critical, so it'll be interesting to see if we're going to have a new commissioner come next year. But regardless, you know, I think you have to hope between George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, who her murderers have still not been arrested. Another day has gone by, still not arrested. Jacob Blake. You have to think at some point society just gets sick of it. I mean,
it hasn't happened yet.
It hasn't.
No. See, that's why I don't believe, I don't agree with what you just said. If society as a whole has not stood up and said, we are one collective and we need to do better. If we have not hit that point yet, I don't believe it's going to happen.
It's sad.
We are going to see ourselves as we are not going to see ourselves as one whole. We are going to see ourselves as multiple little groups. Think about it. And I'll just taking it to a global level. We as a whole can't even admit that we all exist on the same planet and breathe the same air. You know, we are still a globe, a planet of warring countries where you've got North Korea threatening to attack South Korea. You've got Syria going through a civil war where you've got countries, you know, where Russia is poisoning. We're not obsessed with our similarities. We seem as a breed, as an animal, the human beings that we are, we seem to be focused on our differences. And that just seems to be the way I'm looking at human beings right now. And it's sad because I think, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but I kind of am, where like I look at people for like, what do we have in common? And it feels like as a whole, our instinct is to find our differences.
Very true.
Such as, speaking of differences, and I'm not trying to fixate on it,
no.
I have a regular paying job. I collect a paycheck every other Friday, whereas you, Ron, are calling unemployment every other Tuesday to make sure that you get your claim in.
I don't have to call. Thankfully, I can do it right online. So there is that. But thank you for being hurtful. We never did Beef of the Week this week. So maybe
let's do it right now.
You want to do Beef of the Week right now?
Fuck yes, absolutely. We don't go after dark for another 20 minutes.
Yeah, but I gotta be able to get another drink. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that needs to happen. But we'll do this. Beef of the Week. All right, Brian, real quick, what's your beef?
Do you want to hear about the hemorrhoid? Do you want to hear about the New York City is dead?
I'd rather go hemorrhoid because I read the New York City is Dead article, the Jerry Seinfeld one.
I felt the hemorrhoid coming on this week.
Okay.
And it literally made my asshole itchy for about 3 straight days.
That'll
it seems do. To have gone away yesterday. I did take a dump today at work and while wiping, it was very itchy. But for some reason this past week, my hemorrhoid decided that it wanted to remind me that, hey, you're not alone. And it makes life very uncomfortable.
It's been a while since I've had one, but they are very uncomfortable.
Oh, I never had one until literally, and this is just the luck I have in life. On my 40th birthday in Vegas,
nice.
I woke up and just a raging itch in my ass.
Yes, with blue.
My ass. It was just raging, and I didn't know what it was. I hadn't researched it. I didn't know it was a hemorrhoid. Now looking back on it, having done some research and taken multiple photos at close range, but it is, woohoo,
hey-o.
Not fun. Hey-o.
So my beef this week is with my house exactly. And I will say to you, I get it.
Oh, you're your white privilege complaining about your
roof over my head. I'm lucky to be a homeowner. I get it. But this has been the year of just everything going wrong at the house. And like back in April, we had a literal tree fall on the front of the house, damage the roof, damage the gutters. So finally, after this is going on 4 months now, we finally get the gutters replaced today, and they yank off the gutters on one side of the house, and all the wood's rotted away. So they can't put the new gutters back up. So now we got to spend more money to fix the wood that's rotted to be able to put the gutters back up. And then this drain.
So the wood is rotted just like my asshole.
Exactly. It looks very similar. Will you be showing your hemorrhoid to the After Dark viewers?
No. I don't even know that it's visible. It could be inside. Right. It feels a certain way, just fair like enough. The wood in your house. And we know that's not the only rotten wood in your house.
Heyo, I appreciate it. All right, anything else this week before we move over to the Patreon?
Did we hit everything we wanted to hit?
I think so, pretty much. I think we
skipped over the RNC convention because it's insignificant. Jacob Blake. In all honesty, what's going on in Kenosha is beyond anything that you and I really could grasp ourselves around.
Very true.
It's so fucking terrible. We really nailed Jerry Falwell, just like the pool boy nailed his wife. Racism is still there. We didn't really have any celebrity deaths, did we, this week?
No, although I believe one of the creators of Scooby-Doo died today at 87.
That doesn't count. So let's go to After Dark. Are you ready? Are you willing to say After Dark?
I'm ready to cut on out of here. So thank you all for joining us this week. If you liked it, rate us on Apple Podcasts. If you didn't, email us at info@ronandbrianpodcast.com. Tell us how we can do better. But also share us with your friends. Tell everybody about it. Let's grow the phenomenon that is Ron and Brian. And we will catch you all next week.
We'll catch you at After Dark.